From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Monday, July 13th, 2020. The Maine Center for Disease Control today has identified 19 new cases of COVID-19. The total number of cases to date is 3,558. 114 people have died. The strike at Bath Iron Works has entered a fourth week with no talks between the company and the union representing 4,300 production workers. Both the company and machinist Local S6 met separately with a federal mediator last week, but there's been no resumption in negotiations. The dispute focuses on the hiring of subcontractors, changes in work rules, and issues involving seniority. Maine election officials are hopeful that a surge in absentee voting requests won't delay results of tomorrow's primary election. Steve Missler has details.
So far, Maine voters have requested about 200,000 absentee ballots for Tuesday's primary. That's about five times as many as the 2018 primary, and roughly 44,000 short of the state record set during the 2008 general election. Processing that number of ballots, many arriving by mail, can take longer than in-person voting. But Maine election officials have given some town clerks a head start by allowing them to process absentee ballots early. Those ballots are not actually counted until the election. There could be delays reporting results Tuesday if there's a large number of absentee ballots returned on election day. But so far, state figures show 65% of the absentee ballots requested have already been returned and processed. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And Washington's NFL team is shedding its Redskins name and logo after recent pressure from sponsors and decades of criticism that they are offensive to Native Americans. The change comes less than 2 weeks after team owner Dan Snyder launched an organizational review of the name. Penobscot Nation Ambassador Molly Andana is hailing the change. She says after decades of activism by Indigenous leaders and allies, what finally led to the change was awareness about the Black Lives Matter movement.
And how we are seeing representations of race and stereotypes as harmful and as having impact on human behavior and policy.
Dana acknowledges the significance of major corporations like FedEx, Nike, and PepsiCo, who have been pushing for the name change. A new name has not yet been announced. In weather tonight, showers with some areas of fog, still damp with lows in the mid-50s to the mid-60s. Tomorrow, showers and scattered thunder statewide, muggy with highs in the mid-60s to low 70s. And on Wednesday, becoming partly to mostly sunny, drier with highs in the 70s, a little cooler along the coast. During the last few months with the pandemic, remote learning has been a challenge for teachers and students. Some schools have been able to provide several hours of online instruction a day, while others have focused on the non-educational but essential services that they provide. A variety of factors impact how students are performing in this new environment, including who's at home and what kind of access they have to the standard tech tools of modern classrooms. I spoke with Mara Tekin, Associate Professor of Education at Bates College, for our occasional series of interviews, Lessons from the Pandemic, which asks experts, advocates, and others what lessons COVID-19 has revealed about our world. Tekin says the pandemic's illuminating how powerfully class lines are shaping students' learning experience.
Wealthier districts and wealthy private schools are typically able to offer more instruction with more rigorous and engaging learning experiences than poorer districts can offer right now. So wealthier districts and private schools have more resources and stronger infrastructure to support instruction, communication, services, et cetera. But it's also about students' home situations, where wealthier families, they might be more likely to have a parent at home who's not working, who can support students' online learning. Or maybe they're more likely to have multiple laptops or devices so that siblings can actually work simultaneously on schoolwork. Or they're more likely to have strong and consistent internet access. And I think it's also important to note that many low-income families and students are under considerable stress right now, especially if parents are working low-wage frontline jobs, or they're worried about unemployment or maybe eviction, or maybe they're even falling ill themselves. We know that students don't learn as well when they're under stress, so this is also exacerbating educational inequality. We also need to remember that schools meet all sorts of needs beyond just instructional ones. They feed students, often lunch and breakfast, and in some cases, they also provide weekend meals. They provide needed physical and mental health services. They offer occupational and speech therapies. So especially at the beginning of the pandemic, these districts were really focused on meeting these kinds of basic needs.
And one thing that strikes me as you're talking about this is schools in poor districts that spend more of their time and money meeting students' basic needs. That means that they are probably spending even more money on that now.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there is some federal help for some of this. You know, there's the CARES Act, for example, but oftentimes that doesn't cover all of the costs. The rest of this is going to fall to taxpayers. And so it should also be noted that school budgets are going to be stressed for a really long time going forward. So just as schools need more money, localities are less able to offer it, especially poorer places. So, you know, we're also doing all of this in an unprecedented economic downturn, which is making it that much harder for poorer districts right now.
How is what's happening right now during the pandemic a more extreme version of what was already there?
These inequalities have always existed. So as tragic as what we're seeing happening right now, as tragic as this isn't surprising. We shouldn't be surprised. We give our districts really unequal resources, yet we expect our schools to produce equal results. A lot of this has to do with educational funding. Schools basically get funds from three sources: the federal government, state governments, and local. And the local funds are typically property taxes. So what this means is that wealthy communities, which have lots of high wealth property, they can generate all kinds of money to put towards education. While poorer districts, even those that tax themselves at really high rates, they just can't generate those kinds of resources. Some states try to even out these disparities, and Maine actually does pretty well in this regard, but they're not evened out entirely.
In the future, what lessons do we take from what we have learned from this pandemic?
Yeah, so first, I hope we do take some lessons from this. And the talk about kind of going back to normal actually really worries me, because we know that normal was fundamentally unequal to begin with. So one lesson, I think, is making internet a public utility. It's absolutely necessary for student learning. The bigger one, though, is reforming education funding. Right now, we're funding educational inequality, and we've got to move away from this kind of reliance on property tax if we want to really begin to see any other kinds of outcomes. And then more immediately, I think we need better communication with families and better communication with all families across lines of race and class and language, not just the families that are most available right now.
Mara Tekin is an associate professor of education at Bates College and the author of the book, Why Rural Schools Matter. Mara, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
And you can find this and other interviews in the Lessons from the Pandemic series online at mainepublic.org/lessons. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. I'm Nora Flaherty.